Welcome to Component 4, Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is Unit 8, Security. The objectives of this unit include gaining the ability to list and describe common security concerns. Describe safeguards against common security concerns, including firewalls, encryption, virus protection software and patterns, and programming for security. Describe security concerns for wireless networks and how to address them. List security concerns and regulations that relate to healthcare applications. And finally, describe security safeguards used for healthcare applications. When considering threats to data and protecting data, it is important to identify threats to network security and devise a mitigation plan around those threats before allowing data onto a network. Mitigating threats will decrease the effect of bad things that may occur. In other words, we can identify some bad things that may eventually happen, and we want to ensure that those things have minimal impact on our data and other company assets. Mitigating threats can include creating a security policy, authenticating users, using firewalls, installing antivirus software on all devices, using an intrusion protection system or an IPS device in the network, encrypting communications, and finally, auditing adherence to security policies. Most security policies contain provisions related to security definition. In other words, a security policy defines the term security and how to address identified concerns. Enforcement defines how people are expected to obey the rules listed in a policy. Policies also address user access to the network, devices, software and data, password management, email and internet use, antivirus software use, backup and recovery procedures, intrusion detection, auditing, and other topics. Users typically input their credentials in the form of a username and password. In this case, authentication involves something the user knows. Authentication can also involve something that you have, such as a smart card or a badge, or something that is a part of you, such as a fingerprint, a retinal scan, or a palm print. Combining authentication types is known as factor authentication. Three types of authentication factors are used to enforce security policy roles today: one-factor, two-factor, and three-factor authentication. We have already discussed one-factor authentication, where a user enters their credentials or username and password. This is the simplest authentication process. In addition to a username and password, two-factor authentication requires one of the other authentication types, such as a smart card or a fingerprint reader. With three-factor authentication, all three authentication types are required: a username and password combination, a smart card or badge, and some kind of biometric reader, like a fingerprint reader. Another way to mitigate security threats is to implement the use of a firewall in the network. A firewall is software or hardware that blocks unauthorized communication to and from a computer or from one network to another network. Windows operating systems all provide what is known as the Windows firewall, which should almost always be enabled to protect a home or small office desktop computer system. Routers have basic firewall protection built into their operating system functionality. Most ISP routers act as firewalls. Therefore, if your home uses DSL or some other type of internet access that is always on, an internet attacker will be unable to infiltrate your network and attack your computer because the ISP device will act as a firewall that stops that communication from entering your network. A firewall inspects each piece of communication and then permits or denies that traffic based on its configured rules. For example, you will not be able to connect to your brother's PC to copy shared photos unless your brother's firewall is configured to allow that communication. Windows firewall and an ISP router will adequately protect a home office. However, larger networks require more extensive protection through the use of a firewall device. For example, Cisco's ASA 5500 series adaptive security appliance provides a firewall and many other protections. The price as of September 2010 was approximately $2,500. More robust firewalls cost even more. On this slide is a screenshot of the Windows 7 firewall. Starting at the middle top, notice the text that reads, "Help protect your computer with Windows Firewall." Windows Firewall can prevent hackers or malicious software from gaining access to your computer through the internet or a network. The green shield indicates the firewall is functioning. The firewall is set to block all connections to programs that are not on the list of allowed programs. The firewall can also be configured to allow a program or a feature through the Windows Firewall. This is known as punching a hole in the firewall. Looking at the center of the slide, note that Windows Firewall is currently configured to notify me when Windows Firewall blocks a new program. When this computer is connected to a public network, networks in public places such as airports or coffee shops, Windows Firewall Slate is on. In such locations, incoming unsolicited connections are blocked. Requiring all devices to have antivirus software installed is yet another way to mitigate security threats. AV software detects and removes malware. It can also protect against adware and spyware being installed on your system. AV software requires current virus pattern definitions, which means that as new viruses and new attacks become known, the AV software vendor updates the ability of AV software to catch and then quarantine malicious actions. Updates are obtained by subscription and cost approximately $50 per year. AV software searches computer files for virus signatures. AV software is able to read a computer's files and determine if a file is virus-infected or not. If the AV software finds what it sees as a virus, then the AV software quarantines the file. AV software also monitors for malicious computer activity. For example, if a running program attempts to perform an unfamiliar action, the AV software will stop and quarantine that program and its action or actions. For example, would you expect Microsoft Excel to start a search in a folder for files, or would you expect it to communicate over the network to a website without you being part of that process? Typically, the answer would be no. AV software should stop that from happening. Common antivirus software vendors include Avast, ABG Free, Housecall, Kaspersky, McAfee, and Symantec. It is important to perform a web search for antivirus software vendor rankings before investing in one of the options. Many computer magazines actually rank AV vendors, which helps with the decision process. It's best to pay for reputable antivirus protection software that includes automatic updates to virus protection pattern files rather than rely on free antivirus software that may be on your computer. When you think about it, the cost of $50 or $60 a year is nothing compared to the pain of suffering through the loss of data on your computer. In corporate or healthcare environments where security of data is paramount and it cannot be compromised, employing a hardware device known as an intrusion protection system, or IPS, is advised. An IPS is similar to a firewall, but provides much more protection. The IPS monitors all network traffic in real time for malicious activity. Think of what that means. It examines every packet passing through the network and then determines if that packet has bad intent. So the purpose of the IPS is to stop intrusions and then alert network administrators to the threat. On this slide is an image of a Cisco Secure Intrusion Detection System, an enterprise-scale real-time device. Real-time means that the device examines traffic as the traffic occurs, not by capturing the traffic and examining it later. This device is designed to detect, report, and terminate unauthorized activity throughout a network. Its cost is approximately $700. Would you use something like this at home? No, but it is used in larger environments. Another mechanism at our disposal to improve network security is encryption. Anybody who has any knowledge of the Three Stooges knows that they used to communicate verbally using something referred to as Pig Latin, where they would change around the letters of a word, believing that only they would be able to understand what they were saying. Well, encryption, from an electronic standpoint, means that communication is unreadable to unauthorized viewers. Encryption uses electronic private and public key sets. In other words, each piece of encrypted communication has its own private and a public key set. This means that if you encrypt a file on your computer, that you possess what is known as the private key. If you want someone to be able to decrypt that communication, then you must provide them with the set's public key, since only those two keys are able to decrypt this specific piece of communication. Another example is email encryption. For example, you might encrypt an email sent to your doctor. You encrypt it using your private key through the installation of a program in your email client. For example, if you are running Microsoft Outlook, you could install a private key in Outlook that encrypts outgoing email. The email sent to your doctor includes its public key so that the doctor can read the email. All communication encrypted using your private key through your email client is protected, and only those in possession of your public key can read it. Further, a medical office might encrypt data stored on a server's hard disk using its private key and allow the patient to decrypt the data using the medical office's public key. Let's look at encryption using an example that makes sense to most of us, since encryption can be difficult to understand, especially when we talk about encrypting communication from one server to another or encrypting communication from a web server to a web browser. Fortunately, each process is basically the same for each type of transaction. On the slide is a screenshot of a Microsoft Excel 2010 document where we have clicked the File menu, clicked Info, and then clicked Protect Workbook. Notice that one of the entries in the list is to encrypt with password. Encrypting a document is essentially scrambling the contents. When a file is encrypted, the only way its contents can be read is to enter the required password, which decrypts the file. Any Microsoft Office file can be encrypted or password protected in this way. Let's assume that you create, encrypt, and close a Microsoft Word document in which you record your diary entries. Next, you log out, and then your brother subsequently logs into the computer. Looking for new pictures, he accidentally locates this document, which is entitled My Diary. Curious, he double-clicks the file to open it. When he double-clicks the encrypted document, a password dialog box displayed at the top of the slide opens, indicating that the document is protected or encrypted, and that a password is required to open it. Next, he types the word password and clicks OK. Well, if that is not the password that you use to encrypt the document, the dialog box shown at the bottom of the slide appears, reporting that the password you supplied is not correct. Therefore, if your brother or any other potential viewer is unable to supply the correct password, the document cannot be opened. In fact, if you lose the password, you also will be unable to open the document. Any file or folder on a Windows-based PC can be encrypted. To encrypt an existing folder, right-click it and select Properties from the context menu. This opens the Properties dialog box as displayed on the left side of the slide. Next, click Advanced. Click Encrypt Contents to secure data to encrypt all of the contents in the folder. Next, click OK to apply the setting to the folder and all of its contents. Subsequently, all files placed in this folder will be encrypted. This means that files in this folder can only be viewed when you are logged into the computer with the username and password used to encrypt the folder. All other user accounts will receive an Access is Denied message when they try to open any file in the encrypted folder. The notes for this slide list the steps we just reviewed. Even if all of these mechanisms were established to protect a company's network and data, it is still necessary to regularly ensure that people and departments are following the rules outlined in the documented security policy. Therefore, it's important to audit security policy practices. An audit reveals whether an organization is doing what they said they would do. For example, if nurses are instructed to log off a nursing station when they leave that station, how is that process enforced? An auditor would observe the nurses and then record their actions. Another example is ensuring that a database server is kept up to date with critical updates. An audit of the database server's update records would determine when critical updates to the operating system or other software installed on the server were issued, and then when they were actually applied to the server. Other questions to consider are, is all access of medical records being logged? Are backups being done regularly and stored according to the security policy? For example, many organizations will back up hourly and then order that the backup tapes be stored in another building. Is this being done? Do employees adhere to email policies? Additional steps that companies can take to improve the security of their assets and data include educating employees. Employees should be taught to never open unsolicited email attachments. In other words, if an employee receives an email with an attachment, the employee should not click the attachment, even once. Users should be taught to lock their display screens when they are not sitting at their desks. For example, if an employee gets up to get a drink of water, then that employee should press Ctrl-Alt-Delete and then press Enter, which locks the computer from unauthorized use. In addition, users should be taught to never click pop-up ads while surfing. For example, an ad may pop up on the computer screen that reads, "Click here to scan your computer." If the user clicks anywhere in the pop-up window, including the red X at the top right corner, it installs adware, spyware, or even a virus on the computer. Another step towards good security is to educate employees so that they report strange activity to network administrators, encouraging them to be aware of unusual behavior on their computer, for instance, or if they receive a call from somebody asking for their password, indicating that they work for our IT department. Finally, only authenticated and authorized use of software should be permitted. And the software applications should contain rules that record who used the software. For example, a company may have a customized database program that allows users to enter patient information in a database. They later learn that information recorded in a patient's record was not entered correctly. The software should prove beyond a doubt who entered that data, possibly revealing a training issue. When security policies prove that a user or program performed an action beyond a reasonable doubt, this is known as non-repudiation. Therefore, the user cannot deny having entered data in a database, removal of an item from inventory, or any other action. Password policies usually revolve around the subject of password complexity. A complex password is usually at least 6 characters in length and includes at least 1 uppercase character, 1 lowercase character, 1 number, and 1 special character. In addition, a password policy may state that passwords must be changed every 90 days and that the current password cannot be used for 360 days. In addition, a policy might require that passwords are never written on paper. Hackers know that if they want to find a user's password, they should look for sticky notes on the monitor or under the keyboard. They will not hesitate to lift the keyboard and turn it over. Hackers are quite aware of the myriad ways people attempt to remember their usernames and passwords, especially writing them down and hiding them. You should never do this in any environment in which security is essential. Implementing a domain-based network environment is another good security measure. In a domain-based world, a server, which is a computer installed with special operating system software, manages users, devices, software, and domain policies. The server manages all objects that are part of its domain, and the server enforces rules where network assets can only be used by objects that are part of the domain that the server manages. You can think of a domain as a gated community, where the gate around the community represents a guarded geographical location. Therefore, a server guards its domain and doesn't allow any other object to enter without permission. In a domain-based network environment, it is good practice to restrict the number of network or domain administrators. Only people with the need to perform network administration should possess such privileges. When security professionals examine an environment and look for things that they can do to enhance security, they usually look for what's known as low-hanging fruit. In other words, they identify simple things that they can implement to improve the security of data and assets. Physical security of data and network assets refers to measures such as bolting servers to some type of a structure, like a floor in a locked room. Only authorized access is allowed into the locked room. In some environments, for example a hospital setting, there may be a number of servers that are all running 24 hours a day. Assume that there are 100 running servers. All of those servers are password protected and their screens locked. If the network administrator wants to gain access to that server to perform some administrator task, the administrator uses a Windows program named Remote Desktop to access the server. Using this program, administrators can connect to the server from their desk, maintaining the server's physical security. In addition, servers and their devices should be UPS and power surge protected at all times to protect the integrity of the data. Yet another security measure is to validate all data that is entered into any database. For example, if a database name field contains a patient's first name, what would happen if a data entry clerk accidentally entered an ampersand, a number, a space, or a period in the field? Would that action cause the database to corrupt the record or stop functioning altogether? In this case, a hacker may be able to gain control of the database and steal its data. With data validation, data is tested for expected and unexpected field entries. This means that if a data entry clerk is expected to enter a character-based name in a database field, the data should be tested for non-character-based names to ensure the integrity of the data in the database. Then, if the data that was entered in a database form field is invalid, for example, if a name contains a number, the entry is probably invalid, and a message would appear on the screen, asking the clerk to enter the information again or verify that the name actually does contain a number.